Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Welcome to this podcast on behalf of UK Investor Magazine. I'm Michael Wilson and I'm joined by veteran City commentator David Bewick.
You've got to think twice before how you introduce me. Good morning.
And I'm very pleased to see we're joined by Lord Michael Spencer of Alsford, one of the outstanding City businessmen of his generation, former founder of ICAP, an investor and philanthropist these days. When we last spoke, I know it was a while ago, I got the impression that you, I don't know if you're saying it for effect or not, you don't say much for effect, I have to say, you were thinking possibly about leaving the UK. Do you still feel the same about the UK?
I feel more worried about the UK than I did then, to be honest with you, yeah, sadly.
That surprised me.
Sadly, like a lot of people, and I mean a lot of people, I at the time, and I can't remember the detail of it, but I went through a period of thinking, oh my gosh, the socialists, the new incoming administration under Starmer. A lot of people had said before the election, oh my gosh, they're going to be very reasonable people. Listen, Starmer is saying no increase in taxation. He says he's pro-growth, pro-enterprise, pro-business. He set up a business advisory board. No, this is going to be very much more like Blair, Michael. It's not going to be left-wing. And I said, you know what, I disagree with you. Starmer is actually a leftist and a considerable leftist who is dressed up in the clothing of a
balanced middle of the road, yeah,
in order to get elected. But let me tell you, in my opinion, as soon as they get in, they are going to lurch to the left, and we're going to see a return, regrettably, to a high tax, high spend government. And this is going to be the most left wing administration this country has ever seen. That was my forecast at the time. I have been wrong. They've been even more left wing than I had thought. And I really did contemplate leaving the country because I thought the business outlook here would be gloomy, the opportunities would be limited, and I would face a significant increase in taxation. I decided not to go because I really genuinely care about our country. I genuinely care.
Yeah.
And I'm involved. I'm involved. I'm obviously a member of the House of Lords, but I'm chairman of the Centre for Policy Studies, the centre-right think tank set up by Thatcher that did a key job for Thatcher in the 70s before she was elected Prime Minister in developing her thinking of what they were going to do when we got into government, unlike this current administration who had no clue what they were going to do when they got into government. And I am also chairman of the Conservative Party Foundation, and my son happens to be an MP as well, and I didn't want to leave the country. I mean, care for it. So I decided, I'm going to stay here. I'm not going to join the droves of people leaving. I'm going to stay here, get involved, stay involved, and really try and help the Conservative Party, which suffered the greatest election defeat it's ever had in history 2 years ago nearly, and a drubbing that, frankly, was expected and deserved, if we're honest. And I committed to supporting the new Conservative leader, Kemi, who has done, I think, an exceptional job of really bringing the Conservative Party back from collapse. And her personal reputation has steadily improved and is now impressive to watch and somebody I really believe in and can support. So I didn't go, and I'm glad I didn't.
I'm going slightly off piece, Michael, because we've got a really exciting agenda, I think it is, to talk to you about. And what I really want to, before we start talking about our fifth Prime Minister, I think, one of the other things that I've always had enormous respect for you is your judgment on investment. And these are quite exciting times when we talk about AI, and you've got a broad portfolio of investments. And technology, I actually think we're pretty good at it. And do you think that we will, in the course of the next couple of years, get the environment where we can really make something out of it?
I don't think so with the current administration. You might think in a moment of logical analysis that a party that has tried, talked with, I assume, some shimmer of genuine belief that growth is important. Yeah. They seem to say it still. And by the way, we'll get on to Tony Blair, no doubt, in a moment. They talk about growth and they seem to understand at one level that it's important. But notwithstanding that, virtually every action they have taken, every policy, economic policy that they have implemented, has actually damaged growth. I mean, it's extraordinary. It's a bit like, and so you might think or hope that surely by now they would have realised that their policies of, let's say, increasing the minimum wage by a significant number, by national insurance, that these cost jobs and therefore, and cost...
growth opportunities.
Growth opportunities. Yep. You might think that given the failure of their policies so far, the total failure of their policies so far, that they would think, oh my gosh, we better change the way we're approaching. But no, they're going to lurch further to the left if they change Prime Minister. I don't think it's a certainty that Burnham is the next Prime Minister. I think there is a chance. I'm not a Reform supporter, but I rather hope Reform win that seat.
They won't do it without this coalition of the Tories, will they? And all the other things.
I don't think the Tories should withdraw their candidate. No, it's a more complicated debate.
I know. Yeah, absolutely. Fair enough.
But if Reform were to stop Labour from winning that seat, I think that the electorate of McAvoy would have done us a big favour.
Yep.
Because Burnham is going to take us further to the left, despite all his bounce and superficial charm. This is an even more left-wing individual, and he's as much as said it. This is going to be, they can't borrow more, but what they are going to do is tax more. And by the way, I just read in the papers, I haven't read the detail, they're, guess what, they're going to tax the oil companies even more again. It's a tragedy, and of course, you know, this is a disincentive for every businessman in the UK. Is that effectively anything that they can tax, they will.
Yeah.
What about the voice of business? What about organisations like the CBI, BCC and so on? What role do you think they have now? From what you're saying, probably not a lot.
I don't think the government listens to them, to be honest with you. I really don't. I mean, you might think, I haven't read the full details, but I'm sure many people have certainly read the headlines of what Tony Blair has said this morning. Yeah. And he has become actually very interesting and reflective, and he seemed, I think he's matured significantly since he was Prime Minister, in genuinely being an individual, thoughtful individual, who has some very, very sensible things to say. And effectively what he said is a coruscating evaluation of what the current government are doing. And this is from a person who won three elections. Yeah. As he pointed out, I think he is the only Labour Prime Minister who has won two elections consecutively for full terms. And they won't listen to him. In fact, they will diss him.
I mean, it's even though he's come up with all those things like be frightened of AI, but embrace it. Your energy policy is nonsense. Deal with it.
Everybody knows the energy policy is nonsense.
NIC, withdraw that. Exactly.
They're hardcore of extraordinary, extraordinary people like Miliband, who there will be looked. It'll in the future be taken as a textbook case on how to damage your own economy.
Yeah. You mentioned about not borrowing anymore. You think they've got the message they made taxes a little bit more.
Well, they will borrow some more, but I think, who knows, I could be wrong. I've been wrong on loads of things.
My question is this really basically associated with the gilt market, where we've seen eye-watering levels of yields, which in the course of the last week, because we think Trump, or we thought Trump might be somewhere near getting some sort of negotiation with Iran, but that's very much in doubt. But we're still well above any other borrowing costs around the world. Do you think the gilt market is still, how can I put it, suspect?
Vulnerable. It's certainly vulnerable, but my guess is that they will go the route of a land grab in taxation rather than another mega lurch on borrowing. I mean, the Treasury will tell them if they borrow more, you could risk a gilt market crisis. Maybe whoever the new Chancellor is, if Burnham gets in, they say it, maybe Miliband, to me, would be an extraordinary decision, but there we are.
You talked about the Treasury. Is it now time, would you like to see, for example, I don't suppose it's going to happen, but The Treasury is famous for saying no. How about a department which has similar kind of powers and says, yes, a growth department? Is that what we need in this country, do you think? A growth department and a growth minister?
I mean, really, it would be nice if they... I mean, growth isn't rocket science. I mean, it really isn't. If you created a department, put the wrong people in it, it would just be an exercise in PR. And I think governments do far too much effort. It's all PR obsesses them. I'm more interested in people who actually do the right thing. And they have shown no interest in doing the right thing whatsoever at all, at any point. I mean, they've done loads of U-turns, of course, but, you know, why are they still proceeding with the new Employment Act, which is going to take us back to an environment which those of us, the three of us, remember the 70s and the trade unions. And trade unions are already threatening to strike again. You know, as they're going to, absolutely, they're going to go on strike to demand yet more wages. And you might have thought, as a Labour Party and a Labour government, they would qualify any compensation increase to the teachers or the railwaymen or whoever it is, premise those on the basis no more, you know, no more strikes for X number of years. It doesn't even cost their money.
No. Let's deal, how can I put it, in Judy Garland territory, somewhere over the rainbow. So, clean white piece of paper, Michael. What would you do to establish a policy for growth?
I don't think it's rocket science at all. You if said you have that, yeah. the right prime minister, the right a party that understands how business works.
Yeah.
Okay. They don't understand how business works. They really don't. They simply see it as a business. It's like having a tree out there that you're just going to pluck everything off it. And that you cause no damage to the, you're causing no damage to the economy by taxing oil companies dramatically more, or indeed anything that makes money. They have no concept of the organism that is the economy, of how the profitability and cash, these are the things that go into investment, they go into reward.
Employment.
Motivation, you know, all of those things. So we have a government at the moment that effectively, in simple terms, is taking money from the productive part of the economy and redistributing it to the unproductive part of the economy. Why do we think that is going to create growth? And as you know, we now have a welfare environment, which, by the way, has been coming along like a steamroller for several years and started, regrettably, under the Conservative government, where the burden, well, one, welfare now pays more money than being lowly paid in many instances. So the low paid will progressively, are becoming progressively aware that they're the idiots who are not going on welfare. Oh, that's great. So we're now creating an incentive for people not to work and to go on welfare. I've had a very illuminating story from friends of mine, have property in Wales, long-term housekeeper, retiring, perfectly reasonable. They advertise for a new housekeeper, get lots of several, and they, one lady comes along they really like. She wants to work. They offer a job. She says, I need to have a word with my husband first. It's more than the minimum wage they offer her. She comes back 2 days later, so I really can't take him. My husband says, we're better off that I stay on benefits.
And
I
the
mean,
same, we have
madness.
We have a restaurant down the road in Fulham, been there for 20 years, wonderful bloke. And he said, I'm closing down at the end of the year. So we said, why? Rammed every night. He said, because I don't sleep, and the reason I don't sleep is that I can't get anybody to work for me, and they will not work more than 20 hours a week because it damages their benefits. And he said the icing on the cake was Rayner's ridiculous employment laws, which makes employers in an invidious position, and he's just thrown the towel in. And I think we'll find, unless there's a change of heart, many more people of that nature happen.
This doesn't require a new department to do this. It requires a government that is really prepared to be quite forthright, that we have to support the business investors, the people who've got capital, the entrepreneurs, the people who work hard, genuinely, as opposed to the increasing proportion of our society who are progressively dependent on the state and think that the state is obligated and they have a duty to maintain them to a certain standard. We can't afford it.
No, there's no question.
Do you feel as though we've now moved completely away from a two-party system? I mean, that's pretty obvious from the evidence, isn't it? What does that mean in your view? Do you think it's right that there's a disparate amount of political activity in this country, or political amount of parties in this country?
It's not our choice whether it's right or wrong, is it? And we don't have to apply for a license to become a political party. And I think it is a pretty powerful testimony that the electorate have got pretty pissed off with a country that's in this country for failing to deliver growth for the best part of 15 years, maybe a bit longer than that, actually, more like 20 years
now. And
so we've got a very frustrated electorate. We have a risk here, of course, that the electorate are going to the newest, you know, bauble and story in town, you know, whether it be reform or whether it be green. I personally cannot understand how anybody votes green when you read what their policies are, but that's another debate. And I understand the frustration of the electorate. And, you know, I have been a conservative for all my life, and I've certainly in the past 10 years, I suppose, of conservative government have been deeply frustrated by my own party's failure in power to really focus on delivering economic policies that generated growth. They were sort of pseudo liberals, would be perhaps a centrists who were sort of who allowed immigration to go out of control, who allowed the welfare state to grow inexorably, and all these things that have come back to really bite us in the rear end. But the Labour, the current lot are going in the same direction on steroids.
Let's go to some positive things, because we've had our eyes opened by you, and it's quite a frightening thought. But London, the City of London, is doing well in the circumstances. I mean, okay, it's lost business, but it's on the whole held its head up high and done pretty well. The one thing that I would be slightly concerned about is what I call the new revolution in banking, whether it's Revolut or Monzo or Klarna, which you know quite a lot about. And I suspect...
What troubles you about Revolut?
I think it's a brilliant company, but does that change the whole banking system?
Well, I think Revolut's done a very convincing job about democratizing your ability to transfer money to each other at a very low rate of friction and foreign exchange at superbly competitive prices. I think the traditional banks, if the clearing banks, which have obviously for many years have had this dominant market share of the UK financial services, deserved a bit of a kick up the rear end. And
you think it's healthy for competition then?
Yes, I do. And I don't think we should necessarily think that Revolut is financially more dangerous than some of the... let's remind us, if I dare, David, that it's not that long ago that we were looking at RBS going bust, Lloyds going bust, HBOS going bust, Barclays fortunately hanging on, HSBC never under... I mean, so let's remind ourselves that the big boys are quite capable of getting themselves in a mess if they're not properly regulated.
And the competitors are actually open, no, aren't they? Which is different.
If I convey the impression that I was against this slot, it's not. I just wondered what the overall effect would have, whether it just creates more competition, which is a good thing.
I'm broadly in favour of competition. And why not? I mean, that's really what capitalism is about.
Yeah.
Disruption and as we've seen recently, the lending of the commercial banks to the smaller corporate sector has been shrinking again. I mean, in fairness, there are many reasons for that.
Yeah.
That are, again, to do with the way that this country has far too much regulation over many things and every part of business and financial services, and those regulations mean that the banks prefer to lend to big corporates rather than smaller ones. And that's a bad news for our economy. But also at the core of it is, you know, post the financial crisis, the great world financial crisis, which is not that far ago, the Americans allowed their banks to recover quickly and rebuild their profitability. In the UK, we continue to punish the bank and put them on a naughty step, applying increased taxation to them as a punishment. Yeah. I mean, what's the purpose?
Where's the rationale?
You know, if you want, if without profitable banks, you won't have a growing economy.
Yeah.
They are the capital, the liquidity providers there. So we actually want our banks to be very profitable.
Yeah.
And if they are very profitable, our economy will grow more.
It's the way of the world.
Yeah, no questions, as you've been saying quite regularly. These are challenging times. Investors sit on their hands, do they?
We have obviously an extraordinary environment here, which I wish I could understand better, where the news at a certain level on a macro basis looks pretty gloomy. We've got two major wars going on at the moment, one in the Middle East and obviously the other Russia, Ukraine. International tensions are about as high as they've been in
living memory, aren't they, really?
Almost, I'd say, you know, unless we're trying to go back to the early 60s. The economies are in Europe not in great shape. The UK certainly not in great shape. In the US, it's sort of doing better, but not dramatically better. Yet the stock markets around the world are at all-time highs. The New York market is booming, and not just, I mean, led by the tech sector and AI particularly, but not, you know, it's been a pretty broad rally. And I'm to be honest with you, I look at it in some degree of amazement, and I wonder. I hate the word bubble, but I am wondering if this is some sort of bubble that we're going through at the moment. I see today that Goldman Sachs have upgraded their forecast for the S&P by the end of the year. And, you know, the way the market, every morning you wake up, it seems to have gone up again. You think, well, God, that's a steamroller. You don't want
last to 2 weeks, semiconductors, 40% up in valuation. I mean, I just feel that the US market is hanging on to AI and hanging on to the chip sector, and the rest of you stuck a pin in it would go pop.
Do you know?
I prove I'm wrong at my age. That's all I can say.
Well, it won't be the first time you or I are wrong. So I mean, but yes, I do find this all perplexing. Having said that, I've got very few short positions in anything. So I'm going with the flow.
It makes a lot of sense. One thing I would do, where does crypto play a role?
I've never been a crypto enthusiast, I'm afraid. And I've always been, I'm afraid to say, deeply suspicious. Of course, a lot of people say that's because I'm the wrong age group. I don't understand the huge importance of crypto. And I can imagine why. I can imagine, by the way, why I'd use one of the cryptos that are linked, a pegged sort of like Tether.
Yeah.
Where you can, it's a more efficient way of transferring money. And quite honestly, the international banking system ought to get there well. I mean, but of course, at the moment, big money transfer is a very, very profitable business for the bank, which is why we need competition, by the way, because let me tell you, although the big banks are very important, by gosh, they hold on to their, where they have monopoly price, or oligopoly pricing powers, they jolly well hang on to them.
And the central bank has been quite slow in imposing regulatory controls that, you know, that everybody understands that's not going to hamper, you know, expansion plans for business.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
What are you saying, Michael? What are you thinking?
I'm thinking that you still, I don't really know whether you're sitting on your hands or whether you're looking at opportunities and thinking there's something there. You're sitting there, and it's almost a FOMO moment for you, isn't it? Sitting there and thinking, well, I might as well join in.
Well, if you're talking about AI particularly, I do buy the story that AI is going to absolutely change all of our lives. So I don't claim particular expertise, but every business I'm involved with, I just, you know, do we have people who have AI knowledge here? Are we using AI to help our business? If not, we must start. This is essential. We must do it. But it's in a sense a bit like not, this is maybe much bigger than the dot-com boom. But I remember the dot-com boom saying, you know, the digital economy here is going to change our lives in every part of it, in e-commerce and everything else. And at the time, as you know, every single, anything that had dot-com at the end of it, the share price went up fivefold. And at the end of the day, 90% of them all went back down to zero, but 10% of them stayed and became very, very, very big companies. And my feeling about investing in the AI thing at the moment is I think there's a high risk, it's a similar one to that. Anything that looks like AI is going through the roof, 90% of them will, and then
we'll go pop. Yeah.
But well, that, so that's what that, so investing directly in AI, I confess I have done nothing that you could call direct investment in AI. Of course, I've missed out big time.
But on the other hand, you know, there are other things. You've seen the likes of Microsoft and Amazon and loads of other people do it for them with their billions of surplus dollars. So the business cracks on.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're doing that job.
It's done well.
Yeah, I've done well.
Got some of those. So, yes. I haven't got any NVIDIA.
Yeah, but there are other things that you've got a portfolio that keeps you amused. And as you say,
keeps me busy, yes. Yeah,
and you haven't gone short, have you?
I haven't gone short. Now, keeps me busy. I spend now more of my time involved in some of the companies I'm involved with where I think I can add value in where we're going next. And that keeps me keeps me engaged, challenged, interested, and motivated.
Final question before we finish. It looks like, I think all three of us around the table hope that Sir Keir Starmer is the lesser of all evils, rather than having another prime minister. At the end of 2029, will the Conservative Party have regained some of the lost ground?
Yes.
And do you think actually overall, even though they hate each other, that there may be a coalition between Reform and the Tories at the next general election?
I, to be honest with you, I think forecasting 3 years ahead in politics is...
Well, a week ahead is nonsense.
Yeah. In the famous words of Harold Wilson, a week's a long time in politics. A week is a long time in politics. Events, my dear boy, events. And, or was it Harold Wilson?
Harold Wilson. No, Harold Macmillan was that one. No, events, dear boy, events, yep. But no,
I think it was the other way around, but never mind. What do I think in 3 years' time? Well, I think Kemi really has done a remarkably good job, and I had high expectations. I think she has achieved that or more. Her personal ratings are higher than any other political leader by a significant margin. The party itself is lagging behind that. Some critics say, there you are, the Tories have never come back. I'm not so pessimistic as that, because frankly, it's only 2 years since the last election. You know, memories are still raw, and the Tories were there for a long time and really didn't achieve very much, particularly in the last several years. We can make a few excuses, but frankly, voters don't care about excuses. I think this current administration, though, has been even more extraordinary. They've managed to have blown up in less than 2 years. And you could ask the rather awkward question of what do they spend their 14 years in opposition preparing for if they've blown up this quickly? And by the way, they're going now, whether they change their leader or not, this current government will not get better. They simply don't understand business. They don't understand enterprise. They have no idea how to achieve growth. Their efforts at cutting welfare have failed so far, and if they do, they will just trim a little bit here or there. Their heart is not in it, they don't get it, they don't understand it. And in fact, the Labour MPs are screaming that they need a lurch leftwards at this extraordinary moment. Obviously, the Conservatives on the right have a big battle against Reform. Interestingly, Reform now has a sort of a side battle on the corner there with Rupert Lowe. And I think we've seen peak Reform personally, but of course I'm biased and I accept that criticism. They did very well in the local elections. The Conservatives did very badly, arguably slightly less badly than we'd expected. That's small solace. And Restore, of course, is Rupert's party.
Yep.
But the Tory party's got a long way to go to get into combat properly for the next election. So I think forecasting now whether there will be a rapprochement between Conservative and Reform before the next election is premature.
Understood.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.
Michael, always a joy. Thank you so much.
Thanks. And that's the end of this particular podcast on behalf of UK Investor Magazine. Do join us again.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.